Richard Mead is in for a kōrero today. Richard is an economic consultant and university researcher. He's based here in Tāmaki Makaurau, but has been working in this space for over three decades. Today, we're talking with him about the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic on our economy, Russia's war in the Ukraine continuing to affect the rising cost of living happening here and right across the globe, and recent food prices from StatsNZ showing prices are over 12% higher than last year. Richard Mead's a principal economist at Cognitas Economic Insights, but he's been also active in treaty settlements and other Māori sector work for 2.5 decades himself. Richard, tēnā koe. My name's Dale. Thank you for joining us to have a kōrero about the economy and rising prices, etc., with the Māori lens. Thanks for joining us today, Richard. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Dale. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks very much. Richard, obviously when you're doing it tough, and many of our people, not all obviously, are on, living on Struggle Street, 12% increases at the checkout, at the petrol station, literally wherever you turn, prices are increasing, but for those on low incomes, not so. Please share some kōrero about this, the rise we're seeing across the board in the cost of living in our country. Is it attributable to COVID-19 or to international economic forces? What's the driver here from your understanding, Richard?
Dale, I think it's really all of the above, isn't it? Because the inflation phenomenon is something that is worldwide, not just New Zealand, obviously. And part of the cause will be COVID, and that's both because of the supply chain issues, so we ended up with tight supply chains that started costs rising, but also it comes down to our COVID responses. And a lot has been said about the Reserve Bank's response, because when the pandemic hit, obviously they took interest rates down very, very low to keep the economy ticking over. And that's definitely created a lot of momentum in prices, just because it stimulates demand. But also the government's own response, pouring money into things like the construction sector and so forth to keep the economy going, and also wage subsidies and so forth, these created a lot of momentum in themselves. And we are, in effect, having the hangover from what was a bit of a party. You could say at the time, and it's worth debating, you know, were these the appropriate responses from what we knew back at the time that the pandemic struck? But certainly with hindsight, you can say that we probably put our foot on the accelerator a bit too much. And this has created this pricing momentum, and we're seeing inflation at the supermarkets and so forth, and that's definitely a problem. And the Ukraine war, as you've mentioned, for a time at least, that was definitely driving up food prices, because of Ukraine being a major source of grains and wheat and so forth. And this is all just coming home to roost, and the problem is that it creates its own momentum. So once inflation gets going, people want to have wage increases that feed through to further inflation, and this is where the Reserve Bank has reacted very strongly to the hangover, if you like, by jacking up interest rates really, really steeply, because it's trying to choke off any expectation that inflation is going to be entrenched. And so there's going to be a period of pain, but if the Reserve Bank strategy works, then hopefully it'll shorten that period of pain.
Did you sense this when the government went out to try and protect jobs? They laid out a big dosh of money to Middle New Zealand right at the start of the pandemic, and many of us, myself included, thought, well, listen, it's going to be our mokos that'll have to pay for this, because it was huge money, multi-billions of dollars spent in this way. Do you sense now that we overstepped the mark?
I would say with foresight that we did, because very early in the pandemic, I proposed an alternative economic support measure to wage subsidies and business loans, what I ended up calling COVID loans, which was a system modelled along the student loan scheme that meant that people could borrow up to their pre-pandemic revenue levels if they had a hit to their revenues through to the pandemic, and then that loan would be repaid by having a higher rate of tax in the future, just like a student loan, right? So you borrow some money to do your education, and then when you're finished, there's a scale of extra tax surcharges that means you get to repay your loan when you have the money to repay it. And that was a really critical feature of my loan scheme. And when I proposed this, I pointed out that it's cheaper to the government, because it doesn't involve so much borrowing on the government's part. And it's actually more effective as well, because wage subsidies and small business loans only offered very capped levels of support, And if you were a business that needed a whole lot more support, let's suppose you had skilled workers, so the wage subsidy wouldn't really cover all their wages, this sort of scheme meant that you could get better support and affordable support. But it had the important feature that it was a loan, so people who didn't need the support wouldn't actually take it out. And the problem with the schemes that we did do is that they're fairly generalised, and they involved direct funding by the government. It was coming out of the government's own funds, and as you say, that eventually has to be repaid, and there's at least two ways to get there. One is higher taxes, and we've already seen that when the government came in last time when it was re-elected. There was an increase to the top marginal tax rate. And also, we will see higher borrowing burdens on future generations, because it's a mixture of the taxation and debt funding that will pay for the pandemic party.
You've watched, Richard, as I have too, the growth in the baseline pūtea for many of our post-settlement Māori iwi. So there's some dosh there, but in some ways, Māori, I feel, we're sort of forced to watch from the sidelines about economic machinations. What might you say of that? Is there anything we can do about it, or are we just having to go along with the flow, so to speak, in decision-making from Wellington?
I imagine many Māori organisations would say that's a perennial issue and one that wouldn't go away anytime soon. But as someone who has been involved in the treaty settlement process since the NATO settlement that I was involved in negotiating, I'm very proud of the successes that so many Māori organisations have had post-settlement in growing the pūtea, and being able to fund a great many sort of programs that you might think should be the responsibility of the Crown, but effectively the post-settlement governance entities are able to take some control over the sorts of programs they want to run, whether that's educational scholarships, health funding, retirement savings, looking after aged people and so forth. And I was heartened that NATO was able to send a whole lot of support to the Hawke's Bay after the cyclone as their own contribution towards looking after relatives up north, and also just a contribution to New Zealand. And this, I think, is a sign that as these post-settlement governance entities grow, they will become more and more able to take their own initiatives. They won't be saying to the Crown, look, how about you guys do it? They'll be able to do it themselves. You can beg, the question is big, should they have to do it? But I guess this is also a question of just mana and rangatiratanga. So you get to choose what you want to do when you have the resources. And the settlements that have been made are only ever very modest. They're not full compensation by any stretch of the imagination. They don't fully restore the signalling groups to the position they would have enjoyed if the breaches hadn't happened in the first place. But they create a resource base that can be grown over time. And as that resource base grows over time, that's going to give the settled iwi much greater ability to choose what sort of programs they want to support and what sort of initiatives they want to run themselves. And so over time, you can imagine there's going to be a more sort of rangatiratanga being exercised in a bunch of programs or spaces where otherwise the Crown might have been involved.
Tēnā koe, thank you for joining us on today's program, Richard. I look forward to another conversation soon. Kia ora.
Sure, I'd like
to. Tēnā koe. Ngā mihi. Richard Mead, with this economist. You're the